Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi everybody, welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, episode 240. I'm here with co-host Guy. We have got another action-packed episode coming your way.
We've not. Oh. You're wrong. Got a rubbish one today. An absolute garbage one.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
I would not waste my hour. If this is an hour in length, just turn it off.
I don't think we might get to an hour today.
I think it's got a little 45-minute special. What's intriguing is we don't know, but the listeners can see the time, so they'll know how it's gone.
Okay.
And also, we don't know yet if it's going to go out Tuesday or Wednesday, because it's all down to Matt in terms of editing. Bank holiday's thrown us off.
But yeah, it's been a bank holiday over here in the UK, which there's two bank holidays in the month of May.
Your whole life's a bank holiday.
I bloody hate bank holidays, me.
Do you?
Bloody hate them, yeah.
You were saying before you loved it because it gave you a bit more time at the weekend.
Well, I did because I got back on a Saturday. But in normal life, got to pay everyone to have a bloody day off. Twice this month.
Well, you did deserve an extra day off because you had a busy couple of days in France with your friends.
I was going, I was over in France, south of France, Montpellier.
Do you class this as work? Before you tell people what you did, can you claim this has been work, whatever you got up to? Because you claim it as, I'm glad there's a bank holiday, last couple of days. Oh God, I'm stiff, I'm sewer.
Well, no, there's a couple of, I'm sewer. There's a couple of things I'm really proud of myself.
Okay.
So I went to the south of France with my good friend's Mercedes-Benz and I was test driving G-Wagons.
Wow.
I'm going to be honest with you, okay? Yeah. And I think I've said this to you before. Before this trip, I wasn't a fan of G-Wagons.
No.
G-Class Mercedes-Benz, the very functional off-road vehicles that have gained huge popularity in the last 10 years or so with cool rappers and music artists.
Your Cheshire Housewives.
Cheshire Housewives. And I'll be honest, I kind of thought they were a bit faddy and very much footballers end up going buying a Mercedes-Benz G-Class. And I went there and I was like, well, go on then. I'll be entertained by these cars because they're bringing out a brand new electric version. And I went and I spent 3 days in the south of France with Mercedes-Benz and also my pal Seb. And Guy?
Yep.
I'm now officially in love with G-Class Mercedes-Benz. Really? They're unbelievable. But I drove them how they're supposed to be driven. Off-road.
Through Alderley Edge. With his sunglasses on.
Exactly that.
With a parking sign on the front.
They're just parking tickets, are they not? I fully fell in love with them. I probably drove about bloody 10 of these things from really old versions to the brand new electric version. And they're just outrageous. They really are. They're unbelievable vehicles. Whether I get one, I'm not sure. I would be tempted now. Before going away, I thought I was a bit too old, dad of three, bit too heavy set, old, bit of grey in the beard.
Mm.
Can I really be driving around the G-Wagon thinking I'm 25? Yes. Yes,
you
yes
can.
I can. Yes,
you can. Yeah, no, I can. You know what? I've never driven one. I've sat in one once. The only thing I don't like about them, and this is a silly thing to say because I've obviously how substantial and hard they are, but they look like flimsy toy cars. They just bend.
And you're right.
They
look like that. Some of the, we went through this mountain area, proper off-road in these cars. They are ridiculous, but they never get driven like that.
Right.
Ever, yeah. Do they?
Well, no.
99.9% of footballers and Cheshire Housewives that own a G-Class do not drive them through bloody rocky mountains how they're supposed to be driven. I actually feel sorry for G-Wagons that only go and do the schoolroom.
Well, it's like a Land Rover or a Range Rover.
100%.
Not like, really getting used very often for...
Apparently, a survey when people go and buy these G-Classes, the fact that it can...
Okay, yeah.
It can go off-road if you ever need it to.
Well, if you are in Alderley Edge and you're a Cheshire housewife getting your nails done and your highlights, etc., without stereotyping, and you decide that actually I want to take a shortcut, I don't want to go on the main road anymore, Rick. I want to go over some farms. You can.
You can do what you want in it. It goes exactly. Everywhere. Also played a little bit of golf out there.
Yes.
Played at this place. Honestly, it was unbelievable. It was called Chateau de... And it's spelled champagne, but without the H.
Right, okay.
So Chateau de Campagne. Looked a bit rough and ready around the edges. Got out there. Unbelievable golf course. We only played 6 holes on that course, unfortunately, because we had to get to dinner. And then played another golf course, which a video will be coming out soon. I genuinely cannot pronounce the other golf course. But it was, again, it was near Montpellier. Oh.
What's happened, Matt?
Something just broke.
I don't know.
Still here, Matt?
Matt's still here. Has the camera fell down? No,
something fell. Anyway, played another round of golf with Seb. Video will be coming soon. But yeah, really, really cool weekend.
Right,
got back late Saturday and was well overdue the long weekend, bank holiday weekend. Be honest with you and the audience, didn't watch a great deal of golf.
No.
I think a lot of that to do with the PGA Tour this week. What was it?
It was... mine's gone blank. I know that young lad did really well. The English lad.
Chris Kim.
Yeah. Is he English, in fact? I've said English.
He's English, yeah.
I thought he was.
It was the CJ Cup, Ryan Nelson, in Texas. And
he was the youngest person to make a cut for a number of years. I think it was 10 years or so. But actually, on that, Rick, I want to ask you a question.
He's 16 years old.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Chris Kim, amateur from England. We need to get him on the channel. Pronto.
Will he come on? Will he not be one of these kids who's not into watching YouTube? He's just too good.
I'm going to message him now. Is it all right to message a 16-year-old kid?
Yes.
I'm getting him on the channel.
Yeah. What I wanted to talk to you about was, this weekend was also the Lytham Trophy, which is one of the biggest amateur events, certainly in the UK, potentially globally. Would you agree?
Yes.
And I actually don't know who won it this year. Did you see it?
He doesn't follow me. Chris Kim.
Chris Kim didn't. Doesn't follow you?
No. He's only ever posted 14 things.
That's the way they do it, though, now, these kids, don't they? They don't put videos hitting off a G-Wagon. That ain't cool. That was pretty cool. No, so Lytham Trophy this year, it was a 58th Lytham Trophy, which is obviously held at Royal Lytham, and it's 4 rounds of golf, and you see some of the absolute elite of the elite, creme de la creme amateur golfers playing. And it was won this year by Will Hopkins with a score of 1 under par.
Wow.
So it must have been tough. He said it at last round of 66. When you look down this leaderboard, there's a load of nationalities. That the winner was actually English, but there's Welsh. There's, it looks like the Ukraine flag, actually. Is a Ukraine flag red? Blue and then yellow underneath it. It is, isn't it? Or is it? I'm sure that's the Ukraine. Somebody from Ukraine. Yeah, it is. Somebody from the Ukraine. Spain, you name it. There's countries that are, what's the word I'm looking for? Represented. And our friend and your friend, James Robinson, actually won the Lytham Trophy back in 2009. Did you know that, Rick?
I did know that.
And I was looking yesterday.
Another friend of the channel, Frank Kennedy.
Who won it last year. Well, listen to this, right? So James Robinson, this is basically the topic
another friend of the channel, Alfie Plant,
Well, when we look at this Chris Kim from the weekend, who has made the cut on the PGA Tour, it's almost hard to comprehend how golfers this young can be this good. But something else that I sometimes struggle to get my head around, and you could use the many different sports as the example, whether it be football and obviously in this case golf, of what does it take to make it? Because when we look at the Lytham Trophy in 2009, so I'm going to take you back 15 years, Rick, it was won by your friend of mine, James Robinson, okay? He won the Lytham Trophy, which is an absolutely insane achievement and something that I know, understandably so, he's still so proud of this day. And he was sharing some of his stories across the weekend while this event was going on Instagram. Now, if you look at the leaderboard and the people that James Robinson beat, it's insane. So James won it, obviously, as I've just said. In joint third place was Shane Lowry. In 11th place was Tommy Fleetwood. I went through this list. There was Eddie Pepperell was on there. There's loads of guys. Andy Sullivan. The list goes on of guys that are playing that event that he beat. He obviously won the event. That have gone on to have incredible careers on tour. Obviously, in Tommy Fleetwood, a Ryder Cup legend. Shane Lowry, Open Championship winner in 2019. Some incredible, incredible names. You can go down. There's just loads. Tom Lewis is on there. There's so many people. And obviously, James that day came top of the. Well, that tournament came out top. How is it then that James went on to have a career on tour and made it onto the tour, which was a great achievement in itself, and played in the Open and these accolades? And then obviously guys like a Shane Lowry and Tommy go on to do what they do. How hard is it to get to the top level of professional golf?
I know, and this is it. Like, we talk about this Chris Kim now, and hopefully this experience is invaluable to make a cut at his first ever PGA Tour start. It's how they take that transition from amateur golf into professional golf, because it is such a shift in mentality. And I think sometimes golfers go into the world of tour golf after playing a lot of amateur golf and almost change too many things. I believe Tommy mentioned that when he turned pro originally, he felt like he had to do things differently. He had to get a new coach, he had to get a new sports psychologist, he had to sign a new equipment deal. We're actually doing what he was already doing really well, but just continuing it. I think the big thing now, certainly in this day and age, it feels like these young lads who are coming through the amateur ranks at the moment and getting these opportunities, they are like mini tour pros already, aren't they? So I don't feel like much would really change in 10 years, God, 10 years, he'll only be 26. In 5 years' time, I feel like he'll just be a mature version of what he is already. God of the day, like, do you remember when Rory turned up at the Open at... Carnoustie, first ever Open. Was it Carnoustie? Yeah, Carnoustie for his first ever. He looked like an amateur golfer, didn't he?
Yeah.
He wasn't in a clothing contract.
They'd often just have carry bags as well, wouldn't they?
He just looked like, no disrespect, I'm sure he'll, a bit of a scruffy teenager, didn't he, really, at the time. Where you look at this Chris Kim now, he's already got a clothing apparel, he's already got a tailor-made sponsoring him with equipment. He just looks like an already made tour pro. So I feel like the transition is going to be less severe for these young lads coming through.
And that's one kind of side of it. And that does make sense. But the other point with this is that, like, for guys on this list I'm kind of using, you know, there's Jack Senior did well in that event. He's obviously a European tour player. Again, we'll go with Tommy. Lucas Biergaard's on. There's loads of guys who have made careers on the PGA Tour or the European Tour who James beat in this event. Now, I know it's only one event, but it was a four-round tournament. It just baffles me how... Well, it doesn't baffle me, but I just find it so interesting how some of these guys go on and continue to improve and improve and improve and improve and have these long careers at the top of the game. And obviously some golfers just don't. And it just does show that how hard the actual sport is.
So difficult.
It really is. And I think as well, whereas to some degree as well, like, you could argue with professional football, you could play for United at a young age and you could maybe score some goals and get a name for yourself. Now, you obviously have to keep improving and playing well or else you'll get dropped or get sold. But you could argue, and it might be a bit mean and people who are fans of football might tell me I'm wrong, but you can live off your name for maybe a few more seasons. You might go down a league and then go down another league, but you can still because what you've done. Whereas with golf, it's not the case, is it? Certainly in like the amateur level when you first join, you know, if you might have a couple of decent finishes and keep your card for a year, but then if you then start to decline and you lose your card, you don't suddenly really, unless you're a massive name, get invites back to events just because of who you are, really, unless you do get to a certain level. It is such a brutal sport, isn't it?
It's just cutthroat.
That's
the best way of describing it. It's really, really cutthroat. And I think the biggest difference with golf is, in some sense, as you're going up the rankings, there's nobody telling you you're not good enough. I always think this, like, as an amateur golfer, as a wannabe tour pro, at that point, as long as you've got a backer and you've got the fund, you can keep going until you attempt to get on tour or that money runs out and you fail.
Yeah.
Once you're on tour, it's then out of your hands. Doesn't matter how much backing you've got. If you're not making enough money and you lose your card, you lose your card. Doesn't matter how rich mummy and daddy are. It doesn't matter what investment you get in. it then comes down to you needing to keep your card by playing your way through that process, really. Which is just so bloody hard. It really is.
It is. And obviously, speaking of hard, next week, that sounded like I was going to sound really weird then, didn't it, when I said that? But next week, we have the second major of the year, the USPGA. Oh, sorry, the PGA Championship. It'll always be in my head, the USPGA, but it is the PGA Championship. And one guy who is seemingly in great form, and it's kind of almost convenient because he always is, Brooks Koepka. He won live in Singapore. He beat Cameron Smith by 2 shots, 15 under par for the week, and has put himself again right at the forefront of everyone's minds to win another major. Imagine if he gets to 6 majors while Rory's on 4. That will that won't go down very well.
I wouldn't put it past him, though.
I wouldn't put it past
him
either.
Not even a little bit.
But another thing that we wanted to kind of touch on, that was obviously a very brief, Brooks won, congratulations. But the other news story from this weekend, and this is something that I want to hear your take on, Rick, and something that might be an actual podcast clip we might share on YouTube, but it came out over the weekend that Taylor Gooch, well, there's two things. Firstly, Taylor Gooch was not going to go for qualifying for the PGA Championship. Or was it the US Open, sorry?
He made it quite clear.
Which one was it, though? Was it the PGA or the US Open?
Well, I don't believe you can qualify for the PGA Championship. So I think you have to qualify for the US Open and qualify for the Open.
Yeah.
So he categorically said he won't be attempting to qualify for those events.
And that went down, as you'd imagine, on social media a certain way. And it has now come out that he has got an invite for the PGA Championship. And that, again, has gone down social media in a certain way. I personally think that Taylor Gooch should be there. And the reason for that, again, if you look at his world ranking right now, he's world number 644, okay? So on that logic, you would probably, and rightly so, argue, well, he shouldn't be. Why should the golfer that's 644 there? You look at Data Golf, whose rankings are, again, I have no idea how it's all worked out, but seems to be much more live and do appear to be more accurate, certainly for the guys who are playing live. His Data Golf ranking is 35. So there's obviously a massive discrepancy there. I think last year the PGA of America invited 37 people to play in the event. They've obviously already invited Tiger. Tiger's going to be there. And now obviously Taylor Gooch is going to be there. Should Taylor Gooch be playing? And is it a good thing that the US, the PGA of America are inviting him to play in the PGA Championship?
It really surprised me.
Really?
To be honest. Really surprised me. It came as a bit of a blindside. Obviously, we saw the Masters, as they did reach out and invite special players to come and play in the Masters this year, such as Joaquim Niemann being one of them. And I feel like the PGA Championship inviting Taylor Gooch it really came as a surprise to me, to be honest with you, because if you actually look at this year's results, last year we had an unbelievable year. Mm-hmm. On live, don't get me wrong. He had 3 wins, a second place, and another top 10 finish. He had 3 wins, which is massive, okay? When you actually look at this year, he's now moved teams, but obviously his individual performance, he is yet to win this year. Mm-hmm. He's had 3 top 10s. If he would have won 3 times this year, I could understand the invite. I think 3 times last year, and then no wins so far this year, out of 7 of the 13 events that's going to be happening on live. It does surprise me. He's got an invite. It does. And also, with him being so openly kind of not putting himself forward to going for US Open or the Open.
Sorry, just a quick one. It was my bad. Tiger has been the US Open invite, not USPJ. Whereas, obviously, Taylor is the USPJ. PGA Championship.
So for me, it really does surprise me. I'm intrigued to see how he's going to perform. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very, very intrigued to see the fan reaction. I'm interested to see, has he actually accepted it? Mm-hmm. Has he actually come out and said, yeah, I want to play?
What did he put on? He put something on Twitter, I believe. And I don't know if that was him confirming that he's going to play or just saying that he's got an invite. Yeah, he has confirmed it. He's put,
great,
looking forward to Valhalla next week. Thanks for the invitation. PGA, see y'all there. And that has had 442 comments.
Oof. Read some out.
A lot of them are from accounts that are very pro-live, but this one from Flushing It said, well-deserved, man. The times are changing. Good luck at Valhalla.
I think Flushing It's very... Yeah. Live friendly.
A lot of the, this is the thing with Twitter now, a lot of X, a lot of the comments at the top are ones that have got a verified tick that are kind of very pro one way or the other. It will be interesting to see how he gets on. there's an, obviously, there's a lot of jokes about being an asterisk-free major, the fact that he is playing, so we'll see how he gets on. But when you say you're surprised, or do you think he should have had an invite, or do you think he shouldn't? The delay says so much.
It just comes as a surprise. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it or does deserve it. I'm just very, very shocked from considering he won so many times last year. And where, I mean, he won two of his events before the PGA Championship last year, and won two of them after, I don't know.
I think if you actually look, I've just got Wikipedia up here, it's Taylor Gooch's majors performances. Last year, he played three majors. He had a tied 34th, cut and a cut. 2022, he played all four majors, had a tied 14, tied 20, cut, tied 34. So pretty decent, you'd have to say. His best performances in the PGA are cut last year, tied 20 the year before, tied 44, and then cut the year before that. So how he does, I don't know. I suppose for me, though, what it does suggest, and this is why I'm kind of quite pro in playing, is has he set it alight this year? Maybe not. Is he going to win? Probably not, although I don't know, obviously. However, it does show that with the world ranking now, regardless if you're pro live or not live, the world ranking is skewed. It is, isn't it? There's no way he's the 600th player in the world. He is more aligned to that 34 or whatever it was that Data Golf have given him. Now, players like him, 35, players like him that aren't in these majors now, and have no way of being in them. Obviously, it's different for your Brysons, etc., or Mickelson at the Masters, etc. I do think that where there is invitations available, those guys do deserve them. And as golf fans, whether you are pro-live or anti-live, you do want the best field in the best events. And I think the more events we have where we haven't got the strongest field because X player plays on a certain tour, it does start to make a bit of a mockery of golf, at certainly at the highest level. And jokes aside, I don't believe there's ever going to be an asterisk next to a player's name if Taylor Gooch doesn't play. But that could happen if there's certain other players. You know, what if Joaquin Niemann starts not being able to play and he continues to get better and better and better and better? Like, does it become a point in time where genuinely you could have a major tournament where you think, well, yeah, but, you know, such a body's won, but he didn't have X, Y, Z, da-da-da-da-da, who play on live? Like, that wouldn't be very good, would it, for the majors?
No, it needs the best players.
Yeah.
Without question, it 100% needs the best players. And if Data Golf ranks him as 35th best player in the world through fair dues, he should be in it. It probably just, and I'm not saying surprised me in a negative way, it's probably just a bit like, well, I wasn't expecting that. Well, I just wasn't expecting that to take place.
Yeah, no, and we've looked at Data Golf before, and again, I've no idea how these things work, and I don't think many people do, if they're being honest. But they typically, if you look at them, there's sometimes there's quite a discrepancy, sometimes there's not. Like, for example, Scotty Scheffler's number one on both Data Golf and World Golf ranking, and that's absolutely right and should be. Another one that's a huge discrepancy, though, is, there's a couple, but Joaquin Niemann on this one, on Data Golf, is number seven in the world ranking is 91.
Yeah, that's not right.
Now, I don't think anybody who, again, regardless of what you believe in golf, can argue that number seven in the world versus number 91 is much more aligned to number seven in the world. And, you know, the kind of same is this for Tyrrell Hatton. He's eight on Data Golf. He's 17 on World Golf ranking. And you see some even bigger ones, certainly as you get down the list as well. Louis Oosthuizen, 32 on Data Golf, 125 on World Golf ranking. Again, Taylor Gooch is 35 versus 600 and odd.
Is he the biggest discrepancy?
I think he is, because once you get, yeah, it must be, because once you get on Data Golf, once your world ranking is more than 500, that's just the greater than sign, and then it says more than 500. I think DJ was quite a high one as well. Mark Leishman is 73 on Data Golf. Okay, let's see what he is on World Golf ranking. What do you reckon?
300 and...
No, it's 500 plus, right, I'll give you that.
550th.
518. So he's another big difference. Sergio. So, okay, this is interesting. Sergio was 81 on Data Golf. I'm very intrigued to see what he is on World Golf ranking.
Again, is he above 500?
Yeah. He is 714.
Jeez.
And then you've got one more. Paul Casey is 87 on Data Golf. And on World Golf ranking, he's 590. Richard Bland is 94 on Data Golf. This is the last one I'll do. And then I'm interested to see where he is on World Golf ranking. It's going to be crazy. I know 546. Well, yeah, still 500 and odd. So, yeah, you can see there's a massive
difference. But even on the world ranking there, like, on the actual world ranking, it's saying that Richard Bland is better than Taylor Gooch.
Yeah, exactly.
So like that just doesn't add up.
Well, and that's the point that, like, I know, again, silly example, but if, and it's a big if Richard Bland went on to win every single live event now and win them all by 10, he still would have no way of, unless he entered open qualifying or whatever, he's got no way of being in the majors. So you could argue he has to enter open qualifying. But surely if Richard Bland, of all people, went on this absolute spree of winning, you'd want him in the Masters, you'd want him in the Open. Like, it does seem wrong that the world rankings don't reflect that. But again, we've mentioned this many, many times. It still isn't fixed. So who knows?
Yeah, I think it's a good sign for golf fans. We want golfers to be in the majors. Therefore, they're reaching out and getting the right people in the right majors.
So we don't know if Richard Bland will be in the Open. Do we know if Rick Shields will be entering open qualifying? Because, Rick, you said in the last Clubhouse episode released on Friday, you're going to enter open qualifying. And Paul Crooks has asked us on Facebook, did Rick send his application in for open qualifying?
No.
Oh. Oh, hard anticlimax.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Oh,
I have yet to enter open qualifying.
Was that because you just haven't literally got around to the admin of it, or you've been having second thoughts?
I got a little bit of cold feet.
Yeah,
I did. That's where I'm at the moment. I just got a little bit of cold feet, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do it.
As much as I enjoyed it from a content standpoint, I didn't think it was very bullish to announce this kind of literally live on a podcast that you're going to do it.
I'm going to do it.
All right, okay. So what's the delay?
I don't know. I need to save up the 200 quid.
Because remember, for those people that may not have listened to the podcast, it wasn't necessarily a case of you genuinely qualifying for the Open. It was, could you break 75 in open qualifying? The golf course setup will be tough. There's amazing players playing there. The pressure, et cetera, et cetera. It would be an impressive feat.
I really want to do it. It's that funny feeling where when I went skydiving, okay, I was really excited, but nervous. Naturally, you get that nervous in your tummy. And when you stood at the plane door opens and you go, oh my God, I'm actually going to do this. And I'm at that stage at the moment where I'm like, the plane door has opened and I've filled out my details. I've literally got the form in front of me now and I've filled it all out. And I'm like, do I jump? Do I jump? Do I jump? And I think part of me thinking, there is a possibility I might crash and die.
Well, that's the thing. That's the absolute reality of a jumping out of a plane. That could happen. That you could literally die. What's the worst case then of the open qualifying?
I have an absolute nightmare.
A 93.
Well, I mean, that'd be really, really, really bad. Yeah, that'd be a nightmare.
An 87. But the thing is, once you get a nightmare for me would be, I think 82 and below you can kind of live with. It's like, oh, that's a bad round of golf. So once you start getting 85, 87, 90s, that's... However, actually, having said that, one more thing. I think a 93, weirdly, is like, something must have happened. You know what I mean? on the way, he got his arm chopped off. Right, makes sense. So I'd almost rather a 93.
Want to turn up with both my arms?
Yeah, but 86, you're like, oh, 86 is crap, isn't he? 93, he's like, oh, let him off because his eye fell out.
What I don't want to happen, I would take, I don't know what I'm saying, I'd take an 88.
You'd take an 88 right
Listen,
now.
Listen, if I had 15 really good holes and three like proper blowouts.
And ideally it'd be 16, 17 and 18 because it's like, or would it be 1, 2, 3 and then you could recovered?
Just like massive like 9s and 10s and 11s for some reason. Then have an 88 and have like no birdies and like, Two pars and all bogeys.
Do you think though, and this is why I'm quite keen to really explain the difference, that if you were genuinely saying I'm doing open qualifying, I'm putting myself out there, and I know obviously Jimmy Bullard's doing it this year, I think Pete's probably doing it again, I think he is, and they literally, I guess, they get their goal, I haven't watched the content, so I've not kept up with the Jimmy Bullard one just yet, I will watch it soon. I'm guessing he wants to get to the first stage, his real ambition, and see what happens from there. Like, if you go in with the thing, if I want to break 75... Does that not relieve some of the pressure a little bit that people are expecting you to shoot a 62?
Yeah. I am going to do it. I just need to have that little bit of faith and jump. I've already had a look at... my biggest fear is looking at the schedule between now and... I think it's the 20th of June or around that time, is genuinely how much practice can I actually get in. Can I dedicate a set amount of time to practice? And if I can, and the schedule looks like I can... I will do it. I've just not proper planned that out yet in my head.
Do you think you'd need a hell of a lot to break the 75? Or I think
it's more for my own confidence. Obviously, I know if it's Hesketh, I'm trying to think what the other golf course was now. Let's say Hesketh or Caldy. They're probably the ones I'm most likely going to get picked. I'll know I can shoot a good score around those golf courses, don't get me wrong, but doing it open qualifying with the pressure of everyone watching. And it's also like, we want to make a video from it. The other thing I was thinking from a content standpoint, everyone's going to know the result before the video goes out. Does that matter?
Well, no.
Not everybody, but...
Because my idea was, I think the event's on the Monday, get the video out on the Friday. So it'd be a super quick turnaround. And... I still think people would want to see, because let's say you've shot 72 and you've made up. Well, I want to see how you did it. Or maybe, and also we don't maybe share the result. It's only people that go actively looking for the result that would see it. So a lot of the audience would, a lot of them wouldn't be bothered about looking themselves. Or if you did shoot 88, as much as that might pain to put it out, people would want to see how that happened.
Okay.
It was just like a bogey. You didn't write the second. Oh, I thought you were doing it. Your fingers went hot then.
I'm going to do it.
All right, okay. Literally as you speak though.
I'm going to do it right now.
Wow.
I have an exemption from all qualifying. Can I tick that box? No. I need to qualify through regional and final qualifying. Joe Bloggs. Sorry, go on. I won't do this now because it would be a bit boring.
Do it later on, but...
I will enter.
Okay. So to Paul Crooks's question, you haven't sent it off yet, but you will be doing it very, very soon.
I am entering the Open 2024.
Said it now. Set it up. I've had a question from a listener. We've had a lot of emails in recently, which is great, and I love having them back. So if you want to email us, please do podcast@rickshields.com. Correct. This is a bit of a nerdy-ish one, Rick, but I think you're someone that is qualified to answer this. And also, bear in mind, it's an amateur golfer that's asking this question. So,
okay, is this a Dear Rick?
Not really. It's just more of a... We can call it one if you want.
Okay.
It says hi all, but I'll start off with Dear Rick. That changes the mood, doesn't it?
Doesn't it just?
Dear Rick.
Eyes are shut, listening.
Finally caught up and I'm a member of the clubhouse. Thanks for all the great content. Well, first of all, and I can say his name, Lee. Well done. We appreciate you.
Thank you, mate.
I was wondering if you felt speed training was worth it. I'm officially a 10.9 handicap, but playing somewhere near a 15 after a return from injury. Debating whether speed training can fit along technique style work, or should I focus purely on striking it consistently and swing mechanics, etc. I would welcome your thoughts, and this is what gets a bit awkward. I hadn't seen this bit, especially from Guy, as we know he's the long driver of the group, which I'm not anymore.
That
might answer the question, so it's why it's worth it. I also have an RS Merch Tiger putter head cover. I've put it on a Feeler golf putter. It was my junior putter, and I've had it extended and reconditioned it. I reckon it's the weirdest club to hide under one of your putter head covers.
Nice.
Wow. So for a feeler.
Feeler.
So is speed training worth it, Rick? And more so, is it worth it for the average bear?
Speed training is very interesting because it is a process that can be very fruitful, but also is quite challenging. I've done it a couple of times over my kind of golfing life. I've probably done it about 3 or 4 times. And if you're willing to put the effort in and to really go through speed training, not only using speed sticks and actually purposely doing speed training sessions where you're trying to hit the ball literally as fast as you possibly can to increase your maximum clubhead speed and therefore increase your average clubhead speed, it's a big, big journey. It takes months and months and months to finally see results. The question you've really got to ask yourself is hitting the ball longer going to benefit your golf? And I think that's the biggest question. For me, the reason why I wanted to explore speed training over the last few months was I found myself playing a lot of long golf courses, like really long golf courses, whether that's over in America, whether that's here in the UK. And certainly if I'm playing these 10-shot challenges against tour pros, they're hitting driver 30 yards past me comfortably. And where they're hitting a 7-iron or an 8-iron into greens, I'm trying to hit a 4-iron or a 5-iron. And it gets very, very, very taxing. And I certainly think from my own game, as much as everyone says, oh, it's your short game that you need to work on, I'm missing more greens with a 4 and 5-iron than I am with a 7 and 8-iron. If I can be hitting greens every time with my mid-irons and short irons because I'm hitting the ball longer off the tee, then I'll miss less greens, I'll put more, I won't make silly bogeys by just missing a green. So for me, it's very, very beneficial. And I, in my own personal journey over the last, probably since October time last year, I went on a real fitness journey up until about January, doing a lot of weight training, working really hard on my golf fitness in conjunction with speed training. I saw my average clubhead speed go from about 108, 109 miles per hour, which is lower than what I would normally see, to now being able to get my maximum up to about 117 and my average sitting closer to 112, 113. And we've seen that statistically, like in the hit studio, and I'm testing drivers, my clubhead speed's definitely increased. I would say I've seen signs on the golf course that I'm hitting the golf ball further and longer. However, it has come with a detrimental effect. I don't believe I'm hitting it as straight as I was doing. I'm finding that I'm creeping into some bad habits of hitting like snap hooks out of nowhere, which I've not done for a long time. So it's now a case of I've got the speed. Well, how do I house it back into a position that gets me play about on the golf course? So a lot to digest there. It does work. From my experience, it works. If you want to hit the ball further, if you want to swing it faster, speed training works. Does it work for you in your game? That's something every single individual listening and watching needs to ask themselves.
And that's it. And if you think about it, he says here that he's playing off about, well, he's off 11, 10.9, but he's playing more towards a 15 handicap after a turn from injury. So what we don't know with that is it the injury that's then costing him a loss of distance, and that's why he can't play with handicaps, he might have lost distance? Because I think you said at the start something, would hitting it further help him, whatever. I think everybody would love to have 30 yards overnight added to the distance, and I think everybody would improve if they did, obviously. But if he's playing to about a 15 handicap now, that's not a bad level of golf. It's better than the average handicap in the UK, I believe. But it's probably not distance that's making him play off 15 and not off 9, is it? It's probably that little chips around the green and that odd one that you just slice out of bounds that you just shouldn't have done, or that, whatever it might be. So it's like, well, realistically, if he wants to just improve to a decent level, to a 9 handicap or whatever, is it distance he should be chasing, or is it just tidying up his game? Well, yeah. Sort of without knowing him, you don't know, do
exactly.
You?
And you're right then. And also, you don't want to cause any more injuries, because I feel like
exactly.
In the last 6 months, since kind of doing a lot more weight training and speed training, I feel like I've been more injury prone than I ever have done.
I would also say as well, and this is a very broad statement and I've not got any real data to back it up, just my own kind of anecdotes. I believe you can be a, what I don't know if it is even still called category one golf, but a five handicap or better at a normal kind of regular golf club by being a relatively short hitter. There was lots of blokes at my golf course who didn't hit it very far at all, but could play off four or five at a golf we play week in, week out because they understand the course, they know where to miss it, they're pretty straight. Now, that's different if you want to get on the DP World Tour or PGA Tour, and you have to be long these days, or there's the odd exception, the guy that's short but just boss everything else. But I think realistically, for club golfers, it's not that important, is it really?
Not really.
It's not. Well, I remember I played a scratch match once against a guy from another club a couple of years ago, and I was well longer than him, but my drive was going really badly. So I ended up hitting a 2-iron round, and he was a similar distance to my 2-iron. So not, you know, not short, but not long. And he ended up beating me because he didn't make any mistakes. And it's like, for that level of golf, that's fine. That's great. If you'd have put this same guy who's off like 2 in open qualifying, you wouldn't live with those guys, and that would be one reason, because of distance. But it doesn't really matter at this level, does it?
Even when I played with Seb quite a few times, played him a few times in Augusta when we went over there. I played a few times with him in Australia. France when we went recently, he's impossible to beat. And I have 50 yards off the tee on him,
yeah,
comfortably.
Well, there you go.
50 or even there's a couple of drives I was 60 yards past him, and he is someone who's so bloody hard to beat. Because he's always in the fairway. He hits it about 200, I don't want to discourage him, probably 230, 240, 250 at max. He doesn't always hit the green, but he gets up and down from everywhere.
Yeah, I'd take that.
He gets up and down from everywhere.
Yeah.
Where my game is a totally different style. I don't get up and down ever. So I feel like I've got to advance the ball as far as I can to be able to kind of hit the green more consistently. But then, if I hit the ball too far and I get within that kind of inside 70 yards, that's where I don't like it again. So it's all game dependent. You can get the ball in the hole in many, many different ways. You know, you look at probably the biggest case study. Well, I would say there's two case studies out on tour over the last 5 years. Matt Fitzpatrick, huge increase in distance because of speed training. He's now a major winner. He's competing almost every single week. He's hitting the ball outrageously further. He's a real statistician.
Oh, God, I know the word as well. I was thinking when you couldn't say it, statistician.
Yeah, sounds good to me. He really measures his stats, and he has added distance. That wouldn't have been a pursuit without any evidence.
No, exactly.
He's pursued that with evidence that he understands his game, certainly at a tour level, needs distance. Also, when you look at that, who else has tried to add distance over the last 5 years?
DeChambeau.
Who's also very much in stats. Like Bryson DeChambeau has very much increased distance in stats. Distance at a tour level is very, very important.
Well, that's the thing. They're looking at gaining half a shot around, whereas this guy is looking at, you know, he's off 15. How can he get playing a bit better golf?
Yeah.
Is it worth the risk?
Yeah, because even like the best, like when Bryson or Matt Fitzpatrick increases distance, they don't hit it worse offline, really. Like,
no. It wouldn't be obviously always worth, well, yeah.
I play with Bryson. He hits it very, very, very straight for how long
I suppose
hits
when
it.
They do it offline, it's typically when they know they kind of can, and they're going to have a little wedge flicking anyway, rather than a 7-iron, so it's...
It's not offline where they're knocking it off the face of the planet, where amateur golfers, if they did increase the speed, but and again, I think I'm in this position at the moment. Technique's not as good, but you've increased the speed. It's like putting a turbo engine inside a Mini.
Yeah.
Like suddenly it's like, oh crap, how do I control this really?
Last question then, how far in are we, Matt? We said we'd know how long it'd be. Intrigue me. Oh, is that all it is? Okay, well, it's going to be a short and sweet, but this is the last question, Rick, and it's something we've discussed before. We'll discuss it again, and I think we'll discuss it until the cows come home.
Waiting for those cows to come
home.
They're
on the way home. Just going past T-Bay now, so it won't be too long.
Nice.
Anyway, it's from John Carr. I think it is the John Carr, who's been a very regular listener for a long, long time. And it's a question that, and it's not, I'm not annoyed at him for asking it, but I get a bit annoyed about this. And it says, it's very simple, we've said it before, but is golf getting too expensive? Now, I don't know what your take is, Rick, but I'm definitely in the camp of no.
I bought a packet of T-Pegs the other day. And I couldn't believe the price. But I bought them at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Oh, yes.
And I think that summarizes golf in a nutshell. You can pay a lot of money for golf equipment. You can. if you go about your ways correctly, and you know, I bought, God, there was 25 teas in this bag for £2.50. You'll get a heart attack. Yeah. Okay. I could probably buy 5,000 teas for a tenner off eBay.
Well, I'm just looking straight, not quite that value, but even here, these are bamboo, which are in Madeira. There's a jumbo bag of 1,000 for 25 quid on Amazon. So I'm sure you can get obviously much, much cheaper than that, but that just kind of shows that kind of scale.
Cost per tea is cheap. And it goes into anything with the golf equipment. Hopefully you all enjoyed the Costco Drive review I did the other day. Costco Drive was £190. Go to Costco, you can pick one up. Obviously, it's not got the fitting properties, but that was an unbelievable driver for the price. We've also shown you on this channel where you can even buy even lesser price clubs than that. Like you can buy a package set for £250, or you can go to Golfbidder and pick up some secondhand equipment for very, very reasonable costs. I would say where costs have potentially increased, I think green fees have potentially gone up. Mm-hmm. Would that be fair to say?
I don't know. And I don't know the answer to that question.
I think practice facilities have gone up in cost, certainly good ones. But I feel like they're offering more of a service now. Certainly practice facilities, whether that's a driving range, they've got top tracer technology or other technology on the driving range. Like they're offering a bit more. Golf courses, I think because of the demand of golf at the moment, or certainly over the last couple of years, the green fee price has gone up. Potentially membership has gone up a little bit as well because of that, again, that drive and that demand. That is frustrating on that standpoint, but that is business. If there's more people going to facilities, naturally there's obviously businesses, they've got to try and make more money. They go, well, hold on, if we're getting more people, let's ramp the price up and hopefully make more pound per buck.
I have mixed views on this, and I think it's why it somewhat annoys me, because I understand it, and if you are a golf fanatic, and typically people that listen to this podcast week in, week out, obviously really enjoy the golf and spend a lot of the free time playing golf, and I think when that is the case, naturally, not everybody, but naturally you become more into gear. You know, if someone that plays once every year, maybe for a corporate do or something, that might have a set of clubs that they got given by their uncle or their granddad that are rusty and they don't care because they use them once a year. If you play twice a week or three times a week, there's typically a correlation. The more you play, not always the case, I must admit, but typically, and certainly with our listeners, the more you play, the more bothered you are about gear. And when you're more bothered about gear, you often like the latest, the greatest, the shiny new things. And if you look at golf clubs now, from the big brands versus where they were a number of years ago, certainly in like the irons and even putters, they have gone up a massive amount. And if you look now, I'm just having a quick look at like American Golf, even like a set of TaylorMade QI 10 irons, which are kind of a game improvement iron. If you want those 5 to gap wedge, you're looking at £1,000. Now that is a lot of money. I remember only about 6 years ago when a set of forged irons, and these aren't forged by the way, the QI 10, you look at like 599, 699. So I know we've had inflation and all that kind of stuff, and without getting too kind of mathematical, it definitely does feel a lot more expensive. And you look at golf balls, you look at gloves, you look at, you know, golf shoes now, you can get very expensive golf shoes. And it also really kind of, it's what you're looking at as well and how expensive you want it to be. So you can see Nike have got a Jordan golf bag. I've seen it a few times on the Nike golf website, and I'm sure it's like £400 for a Jordan golf bag. Now, obviously, that is ludicrous, and you'd only be buying that if you are literally wanting a Jordan golf bag. It doesn't mean that golf has to always be expensive. You can go onto Amazon, you can go onto Sports Direct, you can buy all right golf. I mean, here, there's a Jordan golf club for £50, and there's a Jordan golf bag for £460. Now, in isolation, you could post those on Twitter as a picture and say, look at golf, it's ludicrously expensive, and people would engage with it and they'd say, I agree. But you can get cheaper stuff, and you can get decent secondhand stuff from Golfbidder, etc., from Facebook Marketplace, that still will get you out there. And I think it's only really, for me, the people who want the latest and greatest that naturally get affected by it so much. If you took up golf today and you wanted to get something just to get you around a golf course, you could buy a package set for £100 max. You could buy lake balls. You could go to your local muni. And I mean, looking now on like tee off times or play more golf or whatever, you can go and play golf courses that are half decent for relatively cheap. But equally, you could go and play at some very exclusive golf courses and pay literally hundreds and hundreds of pounds, which again, I think is why we have this thing in our head that golf is expensive. I think it does frustrate me that people perceive it as that only because it's going to naturally put people off starting the game because you see it as being expensive. If you look at a lot of the golf shoes now, sorry I'm ranting, but a lot of the golf shoes now, and you can even use Echo in this discussion as well, make a lot of on-course, off-course shoes. And yes, they're better than a trainer because they're waterproof, but they're still breathable, etc. But ultimately, they're not a million miles off a trainer. So if you turn up at a golf course in a trainer and a pair of just black pants and a second-hand set or a package set, you can go and play golf.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. I think what is quite interesting as well is like, I was just looking at a few online-only brands as well. I'm not going to drop any names, but like golf equipment you can buy online only. The price there reflects what major brands were 5 or 6 years ago. So you can still pick up reasonably priced irons, golf equipment, etc.
You're right. But even that, and to your point though, about what you can pick up, when we've done videos or whatever, we've used some of like your fans, and an example of this would be when we did the first golfer to make a birdie wins 10 grand.
Yeah.
Ironically, that was obviously a lot of money. But we had 4 golfers come who were big fans of the channel, who love the golf, right? And I was looking at their gear, and most of them had the kind of latest and greatest. Think about it. If you are that much into your golf, you buy a motor caddy, or a power caddy, whatever, 500 quid. You then might buy a bag that is better suited to an electric trolley that's a couple hundred quid. Then you even have to pick up a laser or a GPS watch. Then you might have a Scotty Cameron or even an Odyssey putter and your wedges, your irons, your drive, your 3-wood. Then they've got Galvin Green waterproofs. They've got FootJoy golf shoes. Then they've got a pair of spiked golf shoes they wear. Then they've got the Mac Wets or whatever, the waterproof gloves. Like, it can get ridiculous and you wonder how people afford it. But that is because they aspire to have that stuff and they've found a way to afford it. But again, that doesn't mean everybody has to have that. And I think that's just the difference. It's like what you want and what you need are two very different things. Like gas prices and food prices is a real pain in the ass for most people naturally because we need those things. But you don't need a new laser rangefinder because you just want one. I think that's the difference.
I think you've put that perfectly well.
Do you want to do a Clubhouse episode?
I would love to do a Clubhouse episode. I read a book to my daughter last night.
Wow.
And I do it most nights, but it featured a page on golf.
Okay.
And I knew what to rip the page out, rip it up and tear it up. So we'll talk about that in the podcast.
I'm excited. What could it have done wrong?
It did lots wrong. Too many things wrong. Guys, thanks for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode. Be sure to clock in. So, nick that from another YouTuber.
Clock in? Who says that?
Mike Malik.
Malik. Clock Malik. On,
make sure you clock into the night shift.
Make sure you cock in.
Jeez, that's another podcast we're going to set up. Guys, thanks everyone. Thanks.
See ya.
Oh, by the way, I've probably gone off football.
Right, okay, let's get the next podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.